From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. More Idaho Matters right now. The Netflix adaptation of Idahoan Tony Doerr's book, All the Light We Cannot See, had its world premiere over the weekend at the Toronto International Film Festival. And our resident movie critic, George Prentice, was there to see it. He also got a chance to sit down and talk with the Pulitzer Prize-winning author about the miniseries of his work. And George is joining us now to tell us more about this entire experience. Hi, George.
Hi, Gemma. Greetings from Toronto.
Okay, I was going to say, you're still in Toronto.
I sure am. Lots of movies, so very little time. But obviously, All the Light We Cannot See, what a wonderful extra event for us, right? This Idaho connection.
So tell us about the Netflix miniseries itself, George.
Well, it's really interesting. So when the book first came out in 2014, a major motion picture studio got the rights to it and thought that they could adapt it to a movie. And the original script was about 100 pages long. And just for our listeners' perspective, a page in a screenplay is equal to about a minute. So imagine it was about 100 minutes long, but you know, All the Light We Cannot See is 550 pages. So you can imagine all that was left out in that script, and everybody kind of shook their heads. It's like, no. And then of course the book is also written what's known as a crosscut, right? It shifts timelines. We meet the young Marie at the age of six, and then as a young woman, it goes back and forth. And all along, there's the Nazi occupation of France. Well, along came producer, director Sean Levy, and we know him as the director of things like Stranger Things and the Night in the Museum franchise, etc. Well, he had some experience with Netflix, and he said, what if I were to make this as if it were a four-hour movie? And you being Netflix, you could drop that in 4 one-hour segments. And that's where we are.
Well, and I have to say, George, when I heard that this was going to be adapted as a miniseries, I was thrilled because I really do not think that an hour and a half movie would have ever done this book justice.
Right. And because there's so much nuance, there's so much lyricism in it, and there's a lot of technical parts to this about, I mean, all the light that we cannot see is about radio waves, right? It's about, you know, all these signals that you and I are talking to across continents right now. That is all the light we cannot see. So that was among the things that that Tony and I spoke about. I had a chance to sit down with Anthony Doerr here in Toronto just before the world premiere, and we talked about the inspiration for this title. We talked about the casting. I don't know if you've heard about this, Gemma, but Marie, the main protagonist in the story, young blind woman, is being portrayed by an actress who is sight impaired. Aria Mia Liberti. She has minimal vision. She's completely blind in some environments. And by the way, a PhD candidate at the University of Rhode Island, a Rhodes Scholar. She had never acted before. Wow. And then the young Marie is this adorable girl, Nell Sutton, completely blind, 7 years old. She will melt your heart in the scenes that she has with Mark Ruffalo as the father. So we talk a bit about that and much more. So so let's share some of that conversation I had with Tony Doerr.
Hi, George.
A couple thousand miles and a passport away from Idaho, but it is more than physical distance. Where are you emotionally as we're getting ready to see all the light we cannot see on a screen, no less.
I'm excited. Yeah. You know, it's so fun to see you and like your, this is your comfort zone. I associate you so much with the Toronto Film Festival. And it's really fun to be here with Sean Levy, the director and producer of the show, because he's so excited and he's from Canada. So, and he's getting a big career award also tomorrow
night. It's a pretty big deal here.
Yeah. He commanded an incredible commitment from him because it's all filmed in Europe, primarily in Budapest, but also for a month in France. So they worked under really dire, amazing circumstances. His ability to lead with positivity in those hot afternoons when everybody's tired day after day.
Did you travel to Budapest?
Yeah, and my son Owen got to come too.
So I'm just thinking of the timing in Budapest. I mean, Ukraine had exploded, and you have Ukrainian refugees.
During the filming of the exodus of France, so folks who don't know, in the novel and in the show, in June of 1940, as the Germans come into Paris, one of the main characters, the main protagonist, is blind girl Marie. She has to flee Paris with her father. And, it's an incredibly big moment in the history of Paris, as so many people who were really unprepared, partially by their government, partially because nobody believed the horrors of World War I could ever be repeated. They just didn't believe the Germans would be able to blitzkrieg their way all the way to the capital that fast. So people are just streaming out of the city, often many of them with no idea where they were going to go. So yeah, they're in Budapest filming these scenes, and some of the extras were Ukrainian refugees who've been
plain Parisian refugees.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
And at the same time, which we haven't even talked about in some of these other interviews I've been doing, is that the BBC was trying and successfully sending broadcasts into Ukraine, just using the same technology, the same radio technology that I'm writing about in 1940, 1939. They're using the same technology in 2022. So. Yeah, that the light of Ukraine, and of course the sympathies of the leadership in Hungary.
That shadow is even wider and longer as this comes out. You never saw that coming. That said, it just makes the story that much more relevant, right? Globally
thanks,
relevant.
Yeah,
right?
I hope the story's relevant. I think it's, the timing of it in many ways is perfect, because I hope it's also asking questions about the use of technology for disinformation, for freedom. You know, the way the radio and the show really plays a clear element as, in Marie's case, a tool of resistance against oppression. And in the case of Werner, this German boy, the other protagonist in the show and in the novel, is a tool of control and disinformation. So I hope young people of every age who are watching this are thinking about these new technologies in our life right now, from smartphones to AI, and how are these tools being manipulated by people in power. I hope every time you see a radio on the screen in this show, you're thinking about what's this thing I'm carrying in my pocket and how am I being manipulated. And you know, radio is still such an incredibly relevant tool, as you know.
tell us about this actress who plays Marie.
Yeah, so early on, all of us felt really strongly that we needed. So Marie is, the character is 100% blind, goes blind as a young girl, and we felt we needed to find two actors, because there's young versions of her in the script. We need to find somewhere around 7 and 8 years old and somewhere between maybe 16 and 20 to play the older Marie. And Netflix, this enormous corporation with this huge global reach, was willing, first of all, to follow Sean to cast somebody unknown, which is incredible, but to do a global search. So there were casting directors in like New Zealand and London, all over the world, looking at audition tapes from anybody, a low vision or completely blind actor who was willing to try to play Marie. And this woman, Aria Mia Loberti, she's was a PhD candidate from Rhode Island. She's American.
What?
Yeah. She's so bright. I think she was a Rhodes Scholar, too, although I should make sure.
So not a drama major?
No.
Oh, my
goodness. Actually, George, she was kind of discouraged from going into the theater as a young girl because she was told, you can't do this. You can't see.
Wow.
Her audition really leapt off. Of course, I just get to see it after they winnowed the thousands down, but Sean used the phrase a numbing quantity of audition tapes that he looked at. And she wore her grandmother's clothes, so she wore kind of period clothes for the audition, and She really, she just looked like Marie on the screen to all of us. So, yeah, they did a ton of Zooms with her.
Interesting experience of what she also brings to the director. I know, goodness knows how much she depends on the director, but doesn't he depend on her?
Absolutely. That's such an astute question because I think Sean learned a lot from her, you know, in terms of advice on what a character with a visual disability would actually do in certain circumstances. You know, he was giving an example, you know, the script would say she feels her way to the couch or something. And she's like, well, hey, if I've lived in this place now for 6 months or 12 months, I'm going to know where the couch is. I'm not going to feel my way there. So she was able to collaborate with him in lots of different ways to bring authenticity to the portrayal of somebody with a visual disability. And we shouldn't forget Nell either. So Arya is the older actor, but Nell was 7. Now she's 8. And she's 100% blind, and she's probably my 20-25% of the time. She is so moving on screen. And her relationship with Mark Ruffalo, who plays her father, was really beautiful. You could see, you know, after the cameras are rolling each time, he, you know, helps her down off the thing she's standing on and, like, leads her over to her family. And, yeah, Nell is just a sweetheart. I just loved getting to meet her family, and she does a great job in the show as well.
Let's see if I get this right. It's 2004... You're on a train.
Oh, yeah. That's okay. Right. That's good.
Someone next seat over is having a rather animated conversation on his or her smartphone.
Yeah, something back about the then, Matrix, probably right? Just a cell phone. There's probably not even smartphones. Right. Maybe there were.
Right. And loses connection or loses the signal. But the light that we cannot see, I can relate to that in a very big way. This conversation is coming to people through the light we cannot see.
You got it, right? Yeah. I mean, the enormous percentage of the electromagnetic spectrum is stuff we can't see. Visible light is just 1/10 trillionth of all the light that's out there. Before I had really any section of the story at all, I had that title. The titles usually come quite late to me, but...
Did you keep a notebook or a journal?
Yeah, I carry a little notebook, and that day on the train, yeah, I wrote down all the light we cannot see. And I just had this idea of a girl reading a story to a boy over the radio. And that's all I had. I conceived of her as blind and him as trapped in darkness and him kind of somehow needing this story, using, you know, invisible light, being carried by invisible light through walls and reaching him. And I always conceived of him as maybe blind in other ways. And so, you know, as folks may or may not know, the novel and the show play with blindness both in metaphorical and literal ways.
I want to make sure I have this right, because you just made reference to that. The grand versus the specific, right? Let's see if I have these words of yours correct. The irony of fiction is that the path to the universal is in the individual detail.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, George, right? You got it. That's it. Yeah. I mean, that's what I tell students. Yeah, I mean, you have students who come to you and they're like, I want to write about love, or, you know, I want to write about longing or something. But ironically, to work up in those huge emotions, the way to tunnel into a reader's or a viewer's heart is always through the granular. And so, you know, it's the way to write about longing is the shattered glass on the pavement in the parking lot of the Albertsons on 16th Street. It's not, you know, she was in love. When you want to render a character who's feeling such big emotions, often it's how they hold their hands or what they're doing in their kitchen at the moment. You know, how did they get their mail? How does a person go walk down the driveway in Boise, Idaho during an inversion and get her mail while she's in love? You know, that's how you have to think as a storyteller.
And that's how you get to love, right?
Of course. I think the path always to the way to melt the stars, Flaubert said, is to fumble around with these clumsy thing that's language. He said, we long to make music to melt the stars, but in the end, we just bang around on pots and pans to make music, to make bears dance. That's what he said.
What a treat it is to find you in Toronto, and for our microphones to find you in Toronto, to have this conversation as we anxiously await. I mean, I'm going to be one of the lucky few to see this here in Toronto, but the world, we will see this in early November.
Can't wait for everybody at home to see it really soon.
Are you excited, nervous, all of the above? What is it?
Yeah, I'm excited and nervous and also gratified. I'm just really, really grateful. I try to remember, like, every day how what a gift it is that I get to tell stories for a living. That's just another version of play. When I was a kid playing with my Legos or my G.I. Joes, you know, that's kind of what I get to do every day with language, is try to tell stories and rearrange things. So I just try to enter each of these events here in Toronto with a sense of gratitude.
Great. Good luck with this.
Thanks, George.
You know, it's so rare that someone's, well, I mean, let's use the word genius, is also one of the nicest people on the planet.
Oh, George, he is such a lovely human being. I mean, truly. And you and I are some of the lucky ones who have gotten to chat with him before. But truly, for anyone out there who's ever wondered, like, well, what's he like? Lovely, honestly. And when he says he is, you know, he has gratitude, I think you can feel that coming from him, you know, every time you talk with him.
So generous. And it was so interesting. Our conversation was unlike a few dozen other conversations that he had with other members of the media from around the world, that the folks from Netflix were kind of just watching us chat as if there were no microphones there. But these are the conversations that we have and that we're so blessed to have with someone so celebrated as this Pulitzer Prize winner, right? You know, Gemma, I've talked a little bit about this with you before, that there is a different wave of critics out there who only choose cynicism and they like stories with little, if any, moral compass. Well, All the Light We Cannot See is the antithesis of that. It is about a true north. It is about hope. It is about survival. And critics, I'm guessing, are probably going to be a little bit frosty to this. The audiences are going to adore this. And by the way, that's a pretty tall hill to climb, because people adore this book, right?
Exactly.
And it better be really, really good. Well, the world premiere that I was at, I mean, people stood up and it's like standing ovation for a movie. It's that doesn't happen too often here, let alone anywhere.
Isn't that the truth? Okay, George, have you kept count of how many movies you've seen so far at TIFF?
It's been more than a couple dozen. I'm probably knocking on three dozen films. By the way, not all of them are winners. And some of the films I saw early on, it's like, oh, well, this is pretty good. I was kind of thinking, well, you know, it's kind of a down year. Well, in the last 48 hours, I've seen some films that are just fabulous that I can't wait to tell you about.
Okay, well, I want to know more, because I have to tell you, I just looked to see what was playing this weekend to maybe take the kids to a movie, and we stayed home. So,
yeah. So let me tell you about a couple of films, and I think that I'm fairly transparent, Gemma. You know the kind of movies I like. I like those movies that can really plug into the human experience. So I saw a film earlier today, actually, called Next Goal Wins. I love this film, and it is a true story. It's a comedy written and directed by Taika Waititi, and we know him as he won the Oscar for Jojo Rabbit. He did those crazy Thor movies. Well, this is the true story of the American Samoa soccer team. It turns out that they were known as the worst soccer team in the world. There was an infamous 31-0 loss in a World Cup qualifying match. And to this day, it's considered the worst loss in the history of soccer. So Michael Fassbender, this is a true story. He plays this Dutch-American coach who is just at his career's end. He loses his temper. And the only way he's ever going to have any job is they send him to American Samoa to coach this team that the owners pretty much know they're uncoachable. Well, it's hilarious. It's fantastic and so uplifting. Even though I think some people may know something about this story, it is wonderful. It's an audience pleaser. It's called Next Goal Wins. Michael Fassbender in a rare comedy. I mean, Michael Fassbender is usually this really serious, dramatic actor. Elizabeth Moss is in it. and Will Arnett. And it's I can't wait for people to see this one. I think it opens, I think, in November, and you and I know what that means. That means they probably have their eyes set on a possible Oscar. Speaking of comedies, boy, I saw this one movie that came out of the blue, and the audience roared over this. It's called Wicked Little Letters, and it stars Olivia Colman and Jesse Buckley. And it's the 1920s, a small English town, and all of a sudden, the residents in this town start receiving anonymous, expletive-laden letters, igniting a scandal in their community. And I mean, these are some of the just, oh my gosh, I mean, your ears melt. There's so much profanity in these letters. But to hear these very prim people reading these letters aloud is just, it almost gives you license to laugh. And Jesse Buckley plays this kind of wild single mom, and of course everyone blames her, and so she's put on trial. It's a crazy movie. I have a feeling audiences are going to adore this. Jesse Buckley, by the way, we know her from Wild Rose and The Lost Daughter and Women Talking. I think that this is a possible Oscar nomination for her. And again, the title is called Wicked Little Letters. Speaking of Oscars, I have to tell you about a movie called Lee. It stars Oscar winner Kate Winslet, and it is a fascinating portrait of the American war correspondent Lee Miller, who was a fashion model herself, but then she became a photographer during World War II for Vogue magazine. And it is a fabulous movie. I didn't know the story of Lee Miller. And it's got a great supporting cast. But get this, Gemma. One of the co-stars is a fellow photographer, David Sherman, who was actually a photographer for Life magazine, portrayed by Andy Samberg. In a dramatic role, and he's fantastic in this very serious story as these two photographers go into a war-torn Europe during World War II. And the movie is called Lee, and I have a feeling that a lot of people are going to be talking about that. And I've got one more, speaking of Oscar winners, I got one more to tell you about. And this one is called One Life. And this is the true story of Nicholas Winton, a mild-mannered British stockbroker who became increasingly unsettled by the beginning of World War II, and it was a spur-of-the-moment decision to start helping Jewish children escape from Europe and escape the threat of Hitler's regime, and he changed hundreds of lives forever, these children. Well, you may have heard about this. In the 1980s, I'm going to play you a clip from BBC television. In the 1980s, Nicholas Winton was retired, and he was invited to come to a television studio just to talk a little bit about, you know, his modest effort. Little did he know that everyone surrounding him, everyone else in that theater, were the grown children of the people that he rescued. So I get really emotional just thinking about this. So let's just play a couple moments from this amazing moment.
I didn't really keep it secret. I just didn't talk about it.
Can I ask, is there anyone in our audience tonight who owes their life to Nicholas Winton? If so, could you stand up, please? Mr. Winton, would you like to turn round? On behalf of all of them, thank you very much indeed.
My eyes are just filled with tears. So that's the real Nicholas Winton. And in this movie, he is played by none other than Anthony Hopkins. And it includes a portrayal of that scene. And the movie is called One Life. And if it's possible, here comes another phenomenal performance from Sir Anthony Hopkins.
I think I remember, George, seeing a clip of that on social media, actually, and a couple of years back, and thinking to myself, I have never heard of this individual. And so it's really lovely to see that there is such acknowledgement in a film like this for him.
And he was the definition of modest. He didn't tell anyone. He didn't tell his family about this as he grew older. And it was his wife, as seniors, she tells him to clean up his office. And they're going through some papers, and she finds these records of all of these wow. children that he helped rescue during the war. I mean, that's how this became known.
Wow. So incredible.
Yeah.
Well, George, yeah. I have to say, I am looking forward to all of those movies. So glad you're doing all the heavy lifting for us so we don't have to see any of the duds. But it's always such a pleasure, George, to have you on. And I love when you go to Toronto. So really looking forward to all the reporting coming from you.
Thanks so much, Gemma. I love to share. I've got so many more to talk to you about in the coming weeks and months.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, we're taking center stage. Introducing NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of Black-led stories from NPR's podcasts. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.